The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Hi, everyone. I'm Tracy Jenkins, Assistant Dean for the Office of Career and Professional Development, and today is November 1st, so we're very excited to be able to start talking with you about the job search process and things that you'll need to keep in mind as you go through that, not only for the upcoming summer, but really through your careers as law students, as well as your postgraduate positions. So how many of you remember far back to August when we talked about professionalism during the orientation session? Does anybody remember that? Okay. So that's, you know, there are two components to our office. One is a career development component. The other is a professionalism component. And we're hoping that you really will keep some of those tips and pointers in mind as you go through this process, because they'll be very important things to keep in mind, like your email accounts and how you are representing yourself through social media. And all those things are going to be very important and will come into play as we go through this job search process. So today, just want to give you a sense of what we'll cover, information about our office. We'll also talk, have a discussion from each of the counselors who will highlight certain employer sectors and things that you need to keep in mind and opportunities that will be available to you. We'll provide a very basic overview of the CareerLink system. Have all you received your CareerLink registration information, hopefully yesterday? Okay. And then finally, we'll give you a little guidance on resumes and cover letters, particular information that you'll need to know before you come in for counseling appointments with the counselors that can start as early as next Monday. So basically this week, if you'd like to schedule an appointment, you can certainly do so, but the appointments will actually start next Monday. And I believe today we have sections 1 and 3. So the counselors for sections 1 and 3, if you could raise your hands, I'm not sure what. So, Christina, are you for which one? Section 3, this is Christina Jackson, and for Section 1, it will be Andrew Novak. So I just want you to keep that in mind. So in terms of our office, there's some information in your packet just about general things about our office hours. We have drop-in hours Monday through Thursday from 12 to 1. We do reserve that time for very quick student questions. That is not an appropriate time to come in and say that you need your resume reviewed. So those are really designed to be very quick questions. We have information. The way that we disseminate information about our office is through a lot of different avenues. So we'll have information on the CareerLink system that you just gained access to. We'll have information on MyWCL. You'll see our programs in the elevators. You will see information on the events calendar. You will get information through our various listservs. And we're in the process of just trying to figure out, you know, every student is different. Every student gets his or her information in a different way and likes to get it in a different way. So we're trying to cover all the bases through that. So we hope that when you see something that comes in from our office that you will read it and pay attention to the contents, because a lot of times there'll be deadline information in there for particular employers that you'll really need to pay attention to. We are definitely here to partner with you regarding your job search. We are here to help you in any way we can, and that can be anything from a resume review to a cover letter review to a mock interview, through just sitting through and discussing what it is you think you'd like to do and what the options are, either in D.C. or beyond. So we really do try to take a very broad view of what it is we're trying to help you to do, but it is a partnership, which means that, you know, we can't do it alone. We have all these services, we have all these resources, but unless you take advantage of them, it'll be very difficult for us to help you. So we want you to help us to help you. We want you to help us to help you. All right, so just a couple key points to point out in the packet. We do have a professionalism and no-show policy. We expect all of you to read through that policy and understand the contents and understand some of the ramifications if you don't follow it. For example, it will cover the interview process. It covers accepting and rejecting job offers. It covers career counseling appointments and indicating attendance to programs and events. So you really do need to be mindful of all that. We're not here to make it difficult for you to participate in events or to make it difficult for you to come in for counseling appointments, but you have to recognize that there are guidelines out there in the real world, and we want to make sure that at least if you're acclimated to some of the ones that are here, it'll make it a lot easier as you have to comply with deadlines and other things that employers and clients and other individuals are sort of putting out there for you. Remember, all of this is in preparation for your outreach to employers. And technically speaking, your outreach to employers, meaning that you're sending application materials to the employers, should not take place before December 1st. Well, that creates a bit of a quandary for us, because December 1st is when you all really need to be focusing on your exams. So what we're going to talk about a little today is how you balance that. There are going to be some employers for whom you absolutely can wait until after exams, and I'd say the majority. Our message to you is you need to study, you need to take all this great guidance you've received from the faculty here for the past couple of months, and you need to do well in your exams. So that doesn't mean that you're necessarily sending out 200 applications as of December 1st. So we're really going to have to rely on you to help us to balance that. There may be a very few employers that say, you know, our deadline is December 5th, and if you're interested in our opportunity, you've got to get information in. But I'd say the majority of employers, you can certainly take the time, study for your exams, and then after that, focus on your job search process, hopefully during the break between your exams and when classes resume in the spring. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. So I think what I'll do now is turn it over to each of our counselors. They'll introduce themselves. Our counselors, in terms of how we're set up for the JD student population, we have basically five counselors, so the five of us that you see here. Michelle will introduce herself. She's our resources coordinator and sort of oversees a career link system. For initial resume reviews, you are assigned to a particular counselor. So that basically means if you leave here, you go downstairs, you make an appointment for next week to talk to someone, Section 1 and Section 3 will have a specific counselor that you all will talk to next week. After that, you are free to either continue meeting with that counselor, or you may decide, you know what, I have an interest in working for a small firm, and maybe it might be better if I talk to Eliza or talk to Jen about that. So it's really for initial resume reviews. We just want to make sure that the information you're sending out is in good a shape as possible, so that's why we have these resume reviews and really encourage you to take advantage of them. But after that, you are certainly free to talk to another counselor this year, this semester, into the spring semester, whenever you'd like. And as your career changes, as you're looking at different opportunities, you may decide that it might be better to talk to someone who focuses on public interest, because ideally you're interested in a postgraduate fellowship, and Christina in our office is the person who will sort of guide you through that process. So it's just something for you to keep in mind, but we feel it's important that you do have an initial counselor who will serve as your point person. So I will have each of the counselors, if you all want to introduce yourselves, talk about any specialties you have, and then maybe give a little bit of guidance about your employer sector that will help the students going forward. Great, thanks.
Hi, everyone. I am Eliza Musalam. I'm the one who's been sending you all the emails about these workshops and Career Day. So thank you to all of you for RSVPing. And again, I apologize on behalf of the office for the reservation mix-up for these workshops, but hopefully that's been resolved. So as Tracy was saying, we each kind of have a specialty or a practice sector that we tend to focus on. My specialty is, along with Jen Wetzel, the private sector. So just very quickly, as a quick plug, as you know, that this whole week is an introductory week for our office for the first year class. It culminates with this Saturday's program, which is Career Day. Yes, I know it's on a Saturday. However, that particular program is the first program that is exclusively for the 1Ls, where we have several alums who come back specifically to meet with you and talk with you, both during the breakout sessions that we're going to be having this year for the particular practice sectors, meaning the private, public, government, judicial, alternative careers, as well as then the formal sit-down lunch. So if you have not RSVP'd to that, please feel free to do so. The last possible day that you can do that is the close of business Thursday. After that, I can't take any more reservations. So Quickly, as I said, I specialize a little bit more in the private sector. And so for many of you right now, your first years, we get it, you may have come into law school thinking that you want to do something, but there's a very good chance that you're going to graduate not doing what you're thinking you're going to be doing right now. So for the private sector, as many of you know, there is a economic factor going on in the entire legal profession, but the private sector in particular has kind of really felt that crunch. And so what we have seen in terms of career trends is a trickle-down effect where students who originally were interested in the private sector are kind of looking outside of what, oh, I thought I wanted to be in a big law firm, but now I need to look at maybe a smaller to medium-sized law firm, or really seriously consider, wow, I'm really interested in a particular area of law, and private sector is not just the only place to get it. I can get that in the public sector, in the government, or seeking out some kind of alternative career. So within each of the sectors, there's a little bit of a different dynamic that comes into play. But for the private sector in particular, one easy way to kind of think about this is that you can break up private sector employers by large law firms, which is typically 100 or more attorneys, and which is what many of you kind of, you know, are used to seeing maybe on TV or just hearing about big law. There's also the smaller to medium-sized firms, and medium-sized firms are typically classified where it's 26 to 100 attorneys, and then you have the solo practitioners or smaller under 25 or less attorneys, boutique firms. So with big law, you know, yes, there's several perks that come along with working for an employer like that. You're paid very well, absolutely, but you're paid very well in all of the different, you know, type of private sector employers. But with big law, there's a life-work balance that definitely comes into play, and what your expectations are as an entry-level attorney in a big law firm will tend to be much more, look, we need you just to really take care of some of that grunt work that we can't bill out to the client at a higher level, so it's a lot of document review, a lot of writing and research. And it may not necessarily be a lot of practical experience, for example, work in the courtroom, because you're just not at that level yet. However, yes, you're compensated for that, and yes, you know, you give up some of your free time for that. But that's okay. I mean, there's definitely some perks and there's definitely some, you know, cons. It just really depends on what is it, what is your ultimate life goal, what do you really want to get out of your career as a lawyer. For the smaller to medium-sized firms, some of the flip side of that is that you may have a little bit more of a work-life balance. However, the beauty of that is that you, because of the resources that may not necessarily be available to these types of sized employers, you're going to have the opportunity to get a lot more substantial work and legal experience as that first year or as a legal intern during the summer, because they don't have a class of 20 summer associates. They have you. So it's a lot of great things to think about, and as you start coming to talk to us, we can start to explore some of those different ideas as to what it is that you think you want to be doing and how we can get you there or help get you there. Also, for first years, the opportunities for your first summer job in a large law firm, so I'm talking about big law, they're few and far between, just because typically those summer classes are reserved for second years. And you'll get in here more about the whole recruitment process for those larger law firms as you come closer to the end of your first year and as you're starting for your fall recruitment experience. However, it doesn't mean that you couldn't possibly maybe intern at a smaller to medium-sized firm this summer. So keep your eyes out for different opportunities that may come up with those types of employers. And sometimes it's just a matter of you being proactive and targeting those employers on your own because you know that you really want to get that experience this summer. For the larger law firms, like I said, the opportunities for first years during the summer for their first summer internship, they're few and far between. However, in the spring, you are going to start seeing a lot of postings. All of you right now are automatically signed up on all of the listservs, and I happen to take care of the diversity listserv, but in the spring, you're going to see tons of posting both on CareerLink and through those individual listservs where these larger law firms are going to start hosting receptions for first-year students. I highly encourage you to take a look at those and really consider attending, because if you know for your second year summer that you really want to be in a big law firm and you already have an idea of some of those employers, and gee, what do you know, that employer is actually hosting a reception this spring while you're still a first year, that's a fabulous opportunity for you to get to know those attorneys now as you get ready to start into the fall recruitment process, because you've already started to build that relationship, you built contacts with them, they'll remember you. So I know you're busy. I'm not saying go to all of those receptions, but I'm definitely just saying at least keep an open mind and think about which one of those receptions you might want to go to, because that is truly one of the best ways as a first year to get some exposure and meet some of the practitioners in the big law firms to help you prepare for your second year summer if that's the route that you choose to go. But that being said, I really encourage you, if you are going to Career Day, we will have alums who will be speaking specifically about the private sector, representing both big law law, smaller to medium-sized firm, and as well as in-house work, so working for a corporation in their general counsel's office, who will speak to you much more in depth about each one of these experiences and what they've done to get where they are now. So that being said, I'm going to turn it over to Christina, who will talk more about the public and public sector and government.
Hi, I'm Christina Jackson. How many people came to law school to change the world? Oh, come on. Last year, my section had so many people. All right, I see somebody over there has got me back, right? Okay, fantastic. Thank you. How many people in here are at section 3? Holy moly, you're all going to the law firms? All right, I guess I'll get over it. Okay, but for the, what, 5 people that raised their hands, you can pay attention for a couple minutes. I'm going to talk about the public sector, and for my purposes, the public sector means government, state, local, and municipalities, and the other part of the public sector, which is nonprofits, advocacy organizations, think tanks, independent agencies, and everybody else who is trying to do good stuff, okay? In terms of government, so you're going to see 2 different time frames for hiring. The federal government is usually a little bit earlier than state and local government, but there is a vast resource of internships for 1Ls for your 1L summer. Part of that is because the large firms have very few opportunities for 1Ls. They reserve their classes for 2Ls, and the government scoops up all the great talent. And the other reason is because working in the government gives you lots of great benefits and some really good substantive experience that even the law firms recognize as being very valuable. So let's talk about where we find internships. There is my favorite resource on our website. It's called the Government Honors and Internships Handbook. So on OCPD's website, under the gold box, which is resources, you'll click on job search, skills, and resources, and you will find in the bottom third of the table is where the public sector job search resources are. The Government Honors and Internships Handbook is a comprehensive one-stop shop for internships. It breaks it down by class year, so you can look at your class year, the 1L table. It will tell you all of the internships that are available. It'll tell you paid or unpaid. It'll give you the deadlines. And because you are on the government and public interest listservs currently, and I strongly encourage you to stay on them, you will get updates once a week as to changes to the handbook, updates, upcoming deadlines, all of that good stuff so that you're able to plan. You will see in the handbook that there will be 3 basic categories of deadlines. One is rolling basis, and that means that they take applications as they come in, they review them as they come in, they interview as they decide that they want to speak to a particular person based on your application materials. And that also means that by the time you apply, they may have already filled their positions. So every time you see a rolling basis deadline, you want to make sure that you're applying as soon as you see the post and as soon as possible after the position opens. The second category will be as soon after December 1st as possible. Those are going to be agencies that anticipate getting a large number of 1Ls for their 1L-specific internships, and therefore they're going to be looking for application materials in the month of December. So while you're planning out your job search strategy, and if you're interested particularly in the federal government, over Thanksgiving, after you get done eating the turkey and taking a nap and watching some football, take a look at the handbook and see who are the agencies that you absolutely have to apply to. If you got a job there, you'd be so psyched, it would complete your life. Those are the agencies that you want to prioritize. Try to get those materials together and try to apply as close to December 1st as possible. For everybody else and all the other employers, nonprofits, advocacy organizations, all the rest of the public sector, wait till after finals. The most important thing you can do in the month of December is take your finals. So you want to make sure that you are studying very well for them and that you're doing very well in them, regardless of the sector that you're interested in. That's the most important thing. Secondarily to that, and after you have some time to study and after finals are over, then you want to make a plan for applying to positions. If state and local government is of interest to you, you will see again on the job search skills and resources table, you will see a link for PS LawNet. A couple things that PS LawNet are going to do for you. One, it's going to give you job postings. Great. It is the end-all, be-all clearinghouse of public sector employment. It's also going to give you a resource for state and local government hiring. It breaks it down by state, but you can also search by practice area. You can search by particular agency. You can search by city. Lots of different ways to search. So it's going to be a really important resource for state and local municipalities. They are going to be later recruiters. And by later recruiters, I mean on into probably the spring semester and May. may get right bumping up to the summer in April or May. Okay? So in terms of prioritizing, federal government's deadlines are going to be first. State and local governments and other nonprofits are going to be second, and other public sector are going to be second. Okay? There is also, you'll see in the handbook, something called honors programs. Terrible misnomer, because sometimes summer programs like the SEC are called honors programs. So you need to carefully read what they are, but it'll tell you what class year it applies to. But generally, honors programs just means entry-level hiring programs. So when you get down to your second year, and we start talking in the spring about what you're interested in applying for, that's when we'll start talking about those applications for postgrad. You will apply to those in the very, very, very early fall of your 3L year. So DOJ is the biggest law firm in the country, and it employs the most attorneys in the federal government. Their deadline is the day after Labor Day. So you want to make sure that we're getting your materials ready over your 2L summer. So when you see that, keep that in the back of your mind. We're going to talk in a minute about how you're going to get to the point where you're competitive for that, but that's going to be coming. For the rest of the public sector, that's the nonprofits, the think tanks, the advocacy organizations, the issue specific, the population specific, they are later recruiters as well, and that means generally spring semester. So the Equal Justice Works Fair happened on October 21st and 22nd. That tends to be for that population of employers the first time that they're going to start recruiting for the summer. So you will see now on PS LawNet, on CareerLink, on other places where they post, some opportunities for internships. Their deadlines tend to be either not specific or much later in the spring semester. So for those folks, study for finals first, prepare application materials, and send in all your information after finals. Okay? You will also see, in terms of just options in the public sector, there's a whole category called fellowships. Postgraduate fellowships give you an opportunity to create your dream job. They're rather entrepreneurial. There are project-based, there are organization-based, there are some teaching fellowships. So there are various fellowships that you can apply to that will help you create a project, serve a population, deal with an issue, answer a question, that sort of thing. You will find lots more information about that in your 2L year. We will start talking about that in the spring of your 2L year. The reason why I'm previewing the honors programs and the fellowship programs is because if you want to be in the public sector, you need to start establishing, and many of you already have, establishing your track record of public service. What does that mean? That means getting experiences, doing internships, volunteering, being in a student group, writing about a particular issue, being on a particular brief for a law review, doing the court, mock trial, things that deal with the issue, the population, the issue you wish to solve, that sort of thing. So backing up from where you eventually want to be, part of what we do in our career plan is we say, okay, backing up from there, what are the experiences you need to garner? You are in a very, very enviable position. You go to school in D.C., where most of the federal government and tons of national headquarters for nonprofits and other organizations live, which means you have not only your 2 summers, like your colleagues across the country, but you also have up to 4 academic semesters to do internships. And employers are going to expect you to be doing those internships. So that's part of what will help you do is figure out, should I do the internship in the fall, in the spring? Should I do a practical experience? Should I get some policy experience? All of that stuff. So be thinking about what you want to do so that you can back it up and figure out what experiences you need to get in the meantime. Okay? Another thing that we can help you with, I didn't talk about this last year, but a question I get all the time is moot court, mock trial, journal, brief, student organizations, lots of things come at you. Feel free to come see us about questions like that as well. I've helped people think about what is your career, so what are the type of employers that you're targeting? What's important to them? What do they need to see? Does it have to be law review or can it be a brief? That type of thing. So think broadly in terms of your job search. Think about alternatives to grades perhaps or law review, that sort of thing to make you competitive. There are different standards depending on the sector as to what will make you more or less competitive. So feel free to use our office to say, I want to work for DHS. What are the things that I need to have? And I can tell you. Okay? Couple things that are going to come up for you, and I don't want to miss them. So let's talk about what's coming up for you in terms of connecting with employers. First is going to be the externship fair. You're going to get lots of information from Ava Sanders, who is the director of our externship program, about the program, what it means, what you need to do to participate, and that is going to all culminate in a fair, which we hope is going to be January 18th, but the backup date is January 24th. There are currently registered somewhere around 140 employers. So it's a large event designed specifically for 1Ls, although other classes can attend, for you to be able to make connections with employers. The second event that's going to come up that's going to be very valuable for you is the Washington, D.C. Baltimore Public Service Career Fair. It is on January 27th. This year's location will be George Mason. We are part of a consortia of 7 area law schools, and we bring together, last year was somewhere around 100 employers to talk about all different levels of opportunities in the public sector. So lots of different people are represented. And this year, I've taken on a new role, so I'm looking at all the registrations as they come in, and we've had 3 new employers in the last week. So I'm pretty excited about the range of people that are going to show up at that fair. Okay. Those, along with the diversity receptions and things that are going to get hosted for you guys, are an opportunity for you to talk to employers. And make no mistake, the employers are evaluating you as well, because the great thing is they send decision makers to these functions. They send hiring partners. They send executive directors. They send recruitment coordinators. So they send people that can actually make a difference. So take advantage of these opportunities, starting with Career Day and the alumni that you will talk to at your tables, the alumni that are coming at the breakout session. I'm going to be in the public sector one, obviously, and my two folks in the breakout session are superstars. I'm so excited. Take advantage of these rather informal opportunities so that it's easier when you're confronted with a room twice the size of hundreds of employers to talk to at table talk and that sort of thing. If that makes you nervous to think about hundreds of employers in a room, come see us, because we can help you with that stuff as well. We can help you with the networking and the informational interviews and the informal and the formal. We do mock interviews. We can prepare you for pretty much any situation that you will see, because between all of us, we've talked to hundreds of thousands of employers. The benefits and cons, I'm in the public sector, so there are no cons, right? Okay, benefits are all the stereotypes that you hear about. There is a work-life balance. There are certainly some issues that you may work on that may take more time. If you are passionate about your work, it is probably not a drain on your life, unlike some other sectors. But there are certainly ways to work lots and lots and lots of hours. And there are ways to work 9 to 5 and have a life and have some kids and have a dog and have a cat and do all that good stuff.
What, 9 to 5?
And survive.
And survive, and survive financially. Don't listen to her. Okay. The stereotype about diversity work is 100% true. You will do lots of different things. I have lists in my office. If you come to me and say, I am interested in IP law, I bet you did not know that the Department of Justice Bureau of Prisons does IP patent work. Anybody in here know that? Nice. Or the post office, but everyone knows the post office now, right? So if you are interested in doing a particular type of thing, come see me. I can help you figure out where you can do that type of thing. But the great news is, in the public sector, there are a lot more opportunities to do A or B. There are lots of opportunities to focus on a particular issue, or to focus on a particular population, solve a very minuscule problem, solve a really big problem. So that's a huge benefit. And the other great benefit is you get really good experience early. That can be good, that can be bad. If you're excited about the fact that on day 1.5, you're getting a full caseload, and on day 3, you're in the courtroom, you're probably interested in the federal government. Contrast that with the private sector, where on year 10.5, you might be getting a case all by yourself. No, that's probably an exaggeration. But you certainly are getting experience a little bit earlier in the public sector. That could be good and bad. Primarily, it could be, depending on the organization, because they don't have enough people to do all of those things. But the other great news is, as an intern, you will be doing very substantive work. Lots of my recruiters come and say, if an intern wasn't doing it, an attorney would have to, and we don't have the attorneys to cover that work. So think about that for your 1L summer. Where do you need to get really good research, writing, and analytical skills are the basic things you're going to need to get out of this summer. Where can you do that? And it may be the public sector. There are absolutely some drawbacks. Salary is one of them. There are very competitive salaries in the federal government, but competitive to what? Probably small and mid-sized firms. You are not making 6 figures in the federal government starting out as an entry-level attorney. that's okay. You aren't working 90 hours a week in some cases. So there's absolutely going to be a trade-off, okay? There may not be as many resources, if we're talking about the federal government. I just made a gross understatement. There won't be the paralegals and the secretaries and the IT folks and the support and all of that. You'll be doing a lot more of those things on your own. And that's something else to factor into your job search. What kind of work environment do I want and what type of things do I want to be tasked with? There is little client interaction, especially in the federal government. Government's your client, so you're probably not calling up the president or the attorney general and saying, hey, how would you like me to handle this particular case, right? Different in nonprofits, especially if you're working for a direct client services organization, you'll have lots and lots and lots of client interaction. So thinking about what type of services you want to provide. Do you want to talk to people? Do you not want to talk to people every day? Do you want to be able to do a lot of writing? Do you want to go to your office and know I'm going to do A, B, and C today? Or do you want to go into your office and say, I have no idea what's going to happen today? Think about those things in terms of work environment so that you can figure out what sector you want to be in. Funding. So Eliza mentioned a really good point, and that is, how are you not going to eat ramen noodles and be a public sector attorney? So we'll talk about that for 2 seconds. There are some wonderful resources. We have the Office of Public Interest, and if you look on their website, which is headed by Jared Shirk, you will see a whole funding section. The Financial Aid Office and Jared can sit down with you, look at your particular loans, figure out what your repayment needs to look like, what the schedule needs to look like, backing up from that, debt management, how to not take on the debt load, that sort of thing, can absolutely help you plan ahead, and then we can help you with the post-grad. Right now, your immediate focus is going to be on the 1L summer. And because the reality is 90%+ of public sector internships are unpaid, how are you going to pay for that? Office of Public Interest website, PS LawNet website, has a section for funding, and it breaks it down further. So there is a specific section for summer funding. There are also other organizations like Equal Justice Foundation, which is a student-run organization here at WCL that provides funding, and you will have gotten information about that. There is going to be some tabling upstairs in the 6th floor in the cafeteria on Wednesday, November 9th from 3 to 4:30, and we're going to have prior EJF recipients come and talk about what they did with their funding. So it's a wonderful opportunity to get a sense for what are other people at WCL doing in the public sector. Doesn't necessarily have to be with their EGF funding. You just may find an organization that you're interested in, and there may be other funding that we can talk about that will help you get there. So that's something that you guys should consider going to if you're interested in the public sector, just to get a sense for where's WCL going. Okay, what can you do now? What can you do now? You can go to Career Day. And I don't say that just because I get paid to say that. You could go to Career Day because it is a wonderful opportunity to start the conversation with people who are practicing. Eliza did an excellent job this year of getting relatively younger alumni in our at our alumni tables and in our breakout sessions. These are people who haven't been out even 5 years. What's the longest? Right, exactly. And we have some people who are coming back who have done lots of great things in 2 years after graduation. So this is a great opportunity for you to talk to some people who sat here less than 5 years ago and figured out what they needed to do and made it happen. Definitely something you need to consider. You will also get a great professional workbook that is going to break down the employment sectors like we're talking about and like we do on our website to give you additional information. Who are the players? Who are the employers? What do they look for? What do they need? What do you need to be in order to be successful and competitive for those employers? You want to be checking on the handbook. You want to do that when you have a little bit of time to play with it. You'll see your table. It's very easy to navigate, but you do want to have a little bit of time so that you can plot out your strategy. You want to set up your PS LawNet account. Again, that's you can get to that from our website. It is free for you. We're a member school, and it provides lots of fantastic information. And then if you have some time before final, start working on your documents. Set up your initial resume review. Come in before Thanksgiving so you can get a jump on all the stuff that's going to happen when you get back. We are here, except for the week that the law school is going to be closed. We are here for those appointments, and we can do them by phone as well. So if you have the time to get your documents together and get that resume reviewed before the end of December, you're going to be in a really good position to be able to apply to probably everything you could possibly want to apply to. If you have a choice between working on your documents and studying for finals, what are you going to do? Fantastic. I am very excited to work with you, especially for the poor five people who raised their hand. If you need anything between now and the day you step into the grave, our office is here to help you. Welcome. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Andrew Novak. I'm the Interim Judicial Clerkship Coordinator. I am going to be doing the initial resume reviews for Section 1, and when Amy Kaloran returns from maternity leave in January, she will do the rest of that section. So we have it split between us. But in Amy's absence, I'm going to tell you a little bit about judicial clerkships and judicial internships and externships. As a very recent former judicial clerk myself, I can tell you that there's a lot of judges out there, and unlike other employers, they hire every single year. So you just have to think creatively and think broadly. It's not just your state and federal courts. It's your specialized courts, your administrative tribunals, even your international courts. I found a judicial clerkship to be very rewarding, in part because it's a very sort of it's a kind of an intimate job in the sense that you are the go-to person for a judge. That judge will often rely on you for coming to the decisions that he or she makes. I don't know. I found some judges are kind of indecisive, so they will rely on their clerks quite heavily. So it could be a very interesting job for you. You will hone your research and writing skills a great deal. So I guess there are two dates I want to throw out to you. The first is Career Day. We're going to have some recent alumni who are former judicial clerks. So if you come out to Career Day, you can meet them. We're going to have a little panel. And then on November 15th, which is a Tuesday at noon, you can RSVP on CareerLink. We will have a panel with 2L and 3L law students here at WCL who are going to talk about judicial internships and externships during the year, part-time during the year and full-time during the summer. I guess when it comes to judicial internships, if you want to clerk for a judge, or if you want to intern for a judge or extern for a judge this summer, what you need to worry about come December 1st, if you have an interest in interning for a federal judge in the D.C. area, you need to do that as soon as possible after December 1st. The other thing you would want to worry about is if you are looking at judges in your home state and it's outside the D.C. area, you should apply early in December so that you could interview with them while you were at home over winter break. So those are the two sort of things that come up soon, federal judges in the D.C. area and your home state judges if you're going home for winter break. All other judges can wait until later, until your spring semester. So there's 130 judges of the D.C. Superior Court. If you want to intern with them, they hire sometimes quite late. So it can be April or May before they will complete their hiring process. But the earlier the better. So you want to get your applications in. Unlike most other employment sectors, you will apply to judges typically in hard copy. Rarely will you apply by email. I'm happy to come talk with you about what things to emphasize on your resume. Judges like writing experience. They like journals. They like publications. You know, they like which makes some sense, I guess. But it is beyond that, a very general, mainstream, solid, kind of pure law job that's going to be attractive to a lot of different employers later in your career. That if you go on the AU's faculty website and you look up biographies, a lot of them mention judicial clerkships. It's just that one credential that they have was that they clerked for a judge. And I would list the pros and cons, but really a judicial clerkship after graduation is a term-limited year or two position. It's great if you like it. If you hate it, well, it's not actually the rest of your life. So I think it's a good way to see what you're learning in school in sort of real world experience. So I'm happy to answer any more questions about the judicial sector. You will have to, I suppose, cope with the fact that most judicial internships are going to be unpaid. There are some funding opportunities, especially for underrepresented law students, from external organizations like the American Bar Association, the Just the Beginning Foundation. There are different programs you can apply to, and we can talk about that. You would apply to those beginning December 1st, as soon as possible. But there aren't that many. Those are kind of a very limited list. So most judicial internships will be unpaid or for credit if you do an externship. Beyond that, I'm happy to answer any other questions about the judicial sector until Amy returns. And hopefully I'll see a lot of you from Section 1 very soon. Thanks.
I'm sorry, just to add to that really quickly, just a matter of terminology so you understand. The difference between a judicial internship versus a judicial clerkship. An internship is something that you would be interning for a judge while you're still a student, versus a judicial clerkship is something that you would be thinking about for post-grad. So when you're coming in, speaking to Andrew or any of us, oh, I'm interested in a judicial clerkship as a 1L, we're going to look at you as like a clerkship or an internship, because a clerkship, we're going to tell you you're talking to us a little too soon. Per se, are you focused more so on the internships? Also, just to add to what Andrew was saying, the beauty of a judicial internship and or clerkship is that because you're not specifically married to a practice area or a practice sector, any employer truly, truly values that experience, because that experience is such an intimate one where you are working so closely with a judge, so closely with some of the other attorneys who are there before your judge. So definitely, even if you are thinking private sector long term or public or whatever, think about an internship in the sense of really getting your feet wet to get a wide variety of exposure into the legal profession. And that's something that can happen anytime, any semester, as you are a law student. So just wanted to add that.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jen Wetzel. I am the Section 2 counselor. And in addition to sort of being a general career counselor, I also have a focus on the private sector and small and medium-sized firms in particular. Today, though, I'm going to be talking to you about in-house counsel and alternative legal careers. So who here is interested in one day being an in-house counsel? What? Ooh, even more than the public sector. Okay, so what exactly do in-house counsel do? So corporations face a variety of legal issues every day, but it's expensive to hire outside counsel. So what a lot of corporations do is they sort of set up their own small or medium-sized law firm within their organization. The in-house counsel provide legal advice, they perform routine legal tasks, and they also serve as the liaison with the outside counsel when they do need to be brought in. In-house counsel work with the business side of the organization, and they're expected to flag any potential legal issues that arise, and also to be able to figure out when it is necessary to bring in outside counsel. So companies expect that their in-house counsel are going to be knowledgeable about a broad scope of legal issues and legal areas and provide excellent legal services, but they also expect that you'll be doing it in a more cost-effective way. So how do you do that? Well, first, as an in-house counsel, you're paid a set salary rather than having billable hours. You're also, as I mentioned, going to be flagging potential liabilities and risks as they come up, and hopefully saving the corporation some money in the long run. And I'd like to note that even though people tend to think of large corporations when they think of in-house counsel positions, there are nonprofits and other entities that also hire in-house counsel. For example, you know, a law school would hire in-house counsel. So what are the pros and cons of working for as in-house counsel? They're actually similar to those of small and medium-sized firms. There's really varied work, which is a pro for some people. You get to really experience a lot of different legal areas. Other people see that as a con. Maybe you really have a focus on one particular area. There's also a flexible work schedule. unlike what a lot of people think about in-house counsel, you are working a lot of hours. However, you tend to have more control over when and how you work those hours than an associate at a large law firm, say. You also get greater autonomy, which on the flip side means that you have more responsibility. So once again, it depends. You know, you want to think about yourself and what you like in a work environment. Do you like to have a lot of control and autonomy? Do you like having that responsibility? Or do you like sort of being told what to do and having someone else be responsible for the end product? As I mentioned, there's typically no billable hours, which if you spend even a year at a law firm, you'll realize exactly how nice of a benefit that is. Salary is typically lower than in a large law firm, although not dramatically lower, but you tend to get really good benefits. Sometimes you might get bonuses in the form of stock options, things like that. When you are working as in-house counsel, you only have one client, and that's the corporation. You get to know the company very intimately, which can be really nice. It also means that in-house counsel is more vulnerable to organizational restructuring, such as a merger and acquisition. There isn't any real business development involved in being in-house counsel, so that can help contribute to your work-life balance. You don't have to spend a lot of time, you know, out at dinners trying to woo clients and things like that. One negative is you do have limited resources, more limited than in a large law firm. So there's less support staff. There's also less training opportunities. But if you work as in-house counsel, there oftentimes are the opportunities to transition into an alternate career within the organization if you decide you want to leave law practice. So what do you do now if you want to be in-house counsel? Well, few corporations actually hire in-house counsel directly out of law school, partly because they don't have a large budget for training and they want you to have prior knowledge and experience. So if you have an interest in eventually working as in-house counsel, I suggest that you look into maybe spending your 1L summer or getting a school year internship working for a corporate law office. Even though they don't hire straight out of law school, a lot of corporations will hire summer interns. So that's something to think about. If you know the type of business that you'd like to be involved in, you can also choose a law firm or government agency that helps you learn more about that area of law. Or about that industry, and will bring you in contact with people within that industry. So the other thing I'm going to talk about is alternative legal careers. So some students enter law school knowing that they don't actually want to practice law. Then there's a lot of attorneys who practice law for a number of years and then decide they want to pursue a career that doesn't involve practicing law. If you look up at the panel here, there are five of us here who, you know, practiced for a number of years and then decided that while we wanted to use our law degree, we didn't really necessarily want to practice anymore. So one of the positives of law school is that you develop a lot of skills during law school that are directly transferable to other professions. So think about your research skills, your writing skills, your analytical skills, your ability to see problems from multiple angles, your ability to really break down an issue into, you know, its main components. So those are all skills that are going to be really transferable into a lot of different professions. So there's a few different categories of alternative careers. There's careers where your knowledge of law or a law degree are essential. For example, being a law professor, being a legal commentator, law school career counseling, dispute resolution. There's also careers where having a knowledge of law or a law degree is helpful. For example, lobbying, procurement, regulatory compliance. A lot of law firm administrators have their law degree. Academic administration, any sort of policy work. So these may not require a JD, but law school really helps you to develop the skills that these industries find very useful. Then there's careers that don't relate to the law at all. but the skills obtained during your legal education and your internships are going to be very transferable. So for example, consulting, which really appreciates analytical skills, leadership, things like that. So what do you do now if you'd like to pursue an alternative career? First, think about what it is that you really love to do, you know, whether it's straight out of law school or years down the road. Then identify your interests and your skills, and then think about prospective employers who, you know, might be doing the type of work that you'd like to do. And then talk to someone who has your dream job. See what exactly that job involves and how they got to where they are. Then you can start thinking about what skills should you be developing in law school and maybe early on in your career that will one day get you, you know, going on the path towards your dream job. And finally, don't forget to come in and talk to your counselors because we can help you figure those things out.
Thank you. Before we move on to just a quick overview of CareerLink and some resume and cover letter pointers, are there any questions about the information that was presented by the counselors? No questions? Okay. Then I'll turn it over to Michelle Norris, who's our resources coordinator, just to give you a little bit of information about CareerLink.
Hello. I'm Michelle Norris. I'm our resources coordinator. I'm in charge of our Simplicity site, CareerLink, which is the job search database that we use to help you find opportunities. Yesterday, you all should have received an email from CareerLink. If you did not, please let us know. We want to make sure you're in there and that you're receiving information from us. So hopefully you all opened that and read it. The next thing you want to do with that, you're definitely sign in to CareerLink. There's instructions in there. And you'll be prompted to fill out your profile information. Before you can even navigate anything else, you'll have to fill in practice areas, work authorization, degree level, and geographic preferences. And you'll also be able to, you know, we encourage you to change your password to something you'll remember. The other thing is your email address. Your username is your email address that's in that system. For, you may have noticed whenever you send something from your student email address, it usually appears as jsmith@student.american.edu. The way that we get them from the registrar's office is jsmith@american.edu. So for right now, that's what your login information is. If you don't think you're going to be able to remember to add or to take away the student part, you can get in and change that in your own profile. Just as either remember that they're different or change that. And definitely change your password to something you're going to remember because you don't want to have to reset your password each and every time you try to log in. So you're going to want to also make sure that the information in your profile that you cannot change yourself is correct. If anything that you don't have access to change doesn't appear to be right, if you're listed as a 2L, for example, again, call or email and I'll make sure it gets changed. Right now, you are all subscribed to every listserv that we all do. We encourage you for now to keep all of those, but you are the ones who self-select which listservs you're subscribed to. So if later on, as you notice that you know these are more helpful and these are less, you can take away the ones that are not applicable to you. We also have the ability to store documents there. So as you're preparing applications, you're able to upload your own multiple resumes, multiple cover letters, and identify those. And you can just keep storing pretty much as many of them as you want, which is definitely helpful. Go into the job section, which is where you're going to be finding opportunities, and play around with the settings there and see what's coming up for different searches. As you find, you know, what your areas of interest are and what you're looking for specifically, you also may find it helpful to create a job search agent, which is a tool that we have through Simplicity to sort of save a search and send you the results. And I'm not going to really get into how to do that now. You may be able to figure it out through the information the support information that we have. If you have any trouble, contact me and I'm happy to help you set that up for yourself. If you have any trouble with it, there is, in that email sent yesterday, there is a whole CareerLink user guide. It's very big and very detailed. There is also a link to CareerLink training for 1Ls, which is much less big, much less detailed, but is also just a good overview to take a look at. So log in to CareerLink, do it often. This is where we're going to have all our events posted. This is where the job postings happen. And this is where important online, you know, passwords to get into resources that the counselors will talk to you about live. And make sure you keep your profile up to date. If anything changes, go in, make sure that the information that we have in there is relevant to you. This is how we find out what your situation is, what you're looking for. And in some cases, it's what limits the opportunities and events that are being sorted whenever you're searching. So if you have any problems or any questions, email Career Development or call the office, and I'm happy to help you.
Thanks, Michelle. Any questions, preliminary questions regarding CareerLink? And again, if you do have questions, it's just, oh, yes, go ahead.
Are we limited to using CareerLink to apply for jobs, or are we allowed to, go and directly apply to them?
It's a very good question. So for those of you who didn't hear it, whether or not CareerLink is the only place where you'd look for employment opportunities, or if you can go beyond that, and definitely the latter. CareerLink should be just one aspect of your job search strategy. So for example, if you're looking for an internship on the West Coast next year, we may not have as many postings as maybe a school on the West Coast. So you want to make sure that you're using CareerLink, but you're also supplementing that information by doing direct applications to employers of interest. And that's certainly something that we can discuss with you during counseling sessions, but very good question. Yes. Any other questions? Okay, again, it's just careerdevelopment@wcl.american.edu. So if you run into any questions, and there's also an FAQ section in the back of your packet that addresses some of the basic information about CareerLink. And I'm going to stand up here for a second. We're just going to spend the next couple of minutes just briefly talking about resumes and cover letters. And I can tell you that one way to really make your first counseling appointment effective with a counselor is to really go through the resume that you have. Please add American University, Washington College of Law. You all are all at the law school. You're all JD students. Even not having that information on your resume can take a few minutes just to sort of walk through what parts of that need to be on, how it should be formatted, including a location. So what we've included in your packet are a couple of things. The first thing is just how you can build an effective resume. And some of you may have had experience outside of in between undergrad and law school. Really, at this point, you are portraying yourself as a law student. So your education section will be the first section. And again, that will include the law school. Your experience. Typically, we do not distinguish between paid and unpaid positions. Your experience is your experience. It's not necessary to write that you worked for 15 hours a week for $10 an hour. The main thing is, what are the skills that you developed in those particular positions that you had, either as an intern or maybe a full-time position that you had in between undergrad and law school. So we have a couple of recommendations for that. Additional things that you'll want to consider: if you've been published already, if you've been involved in a publication through your undergraduate institution or otherwise, that's something that you might want to incorporate on your resume. Language skills, things you should consider, whether or not it's really basic. I took Spanish in high school, so I can sort of understand Spanish, versus I am fluent in Spanish, or Spanish is my native language. So we need to sort of talk through, if you're going to have a language skill on your resume, what does that really mean, and are you making sure that it's an accurate description of what you can, what your skills are with that language. Personal interest in travel. A lot of times, especially sometimes judges and other employers like to see this, because again, if you're working very closely with people, they want to get a sense of who you are outside of the resume. Now, we do say unique and extensive, but please don't make it so unique that you're viewed as someone, wow, okay, I remember that student, they had that unique interest in doing X, Y, and Z, and it becomes a negative as opposed to a positive. So again, it's something that counselors can discuss with you.
Special skills, licenses, affiliations. If you're interested in securities law or financial types of areas and you have a CPA, that could be incredibly helpful. So we're trying to decide how to place that on your resume. Leadership and community service. I think for a lot of legal employers these days, your leadership skills, working with groups, all those types of skills that help you to show to an employer what type of employee you could be and what value you could share with the organization is really important to know. And again, that could be something you did in undergrad. It could be something that you did in a community setting. So those are things as well to think about. And security clearance. Again, very important for the government. If you already have a top secret security clearance, that could be very helpful as you're going through the application process with some employers. We also have a list of things that you are going to want to probably discuss with an OCPD counselor. So for example, once you receive your first set of grades, do you include your GPA on your resume? We get a lot of misconceptions about, well, is there a bright line rule about when you apply, when you have your GPA on your resume? And there's not. I mean, we can certainly give you a sense of, well, if you put it on your resume, this is how the employer may see it, or if you don't put it on because you're including a transcript, the employer could see it this way. So those, again, are things that you'll want to talk about with a counselor. Whether to include things like fraternities, sororities, religious affiliations, political affiliations, again, that may differ depending on your audience, right? So you might have one resume that has your political affiliations because you're applying to, you know, Republican House member on the Hill, and you want them to see that you've already done some things along those lines. But for another employer, perhaps that's not information that you will necessarily have on your resume, depending on what it is they're doing and what you'd be doing with that employer. Whether to reuse a format other than reverse chronological order. So we will typically advise that you're using a format that is in reverse chron order, meaning that everything is present to things that are in the past. You can get out of that format by changing the headers on your resume. So instead of having experience, maybe you have, you know, legal experience. Maybe you were a paralegal or you worked at a law firm for several years and you want to highlight that first and then go into something that's a little more recent. So again, these are things that we can talk to you about in terms of how to craft the best resume. Appropriate length. I mean, again, a myth. Most people think if I don't have a one-page resume, it's just going to be ripped up and not reviewed. Well, for some employers, a one-page resume is the most appropriate. But for other employers, for example, in the public sector, we're really showing your interest in an area. We're showing doing community service work really goes to the passion of what you have for that particular organization or what their mission is. You might very well want to highlight a lot of that experience. What I would suggest is if it goes on to 2 pages, really evaluate, well, what's on the second page? If you only have 2 lines on the second page, we really might want to think about getting your resume down to a one-page resume. So, again, things that you might want to raise with a counselor. Use of a local or permanent address. Again, if you're looking on the West Coast and you have family and that's where your home address is, you may have a resume specifically for those West Coast employers that have both your WCL resume address in D.C. as well as your home address, showing an employer initially off the bat, even if they don't read your cover letter, that, yes, you do have a connection to that geographic area. So, again, something to think about. And this is all going to change as you progress. So as you get experience, as you decide where you want to be, your resume is going to take on different versions. And you may have 2 or 3 versions depending on what it is you're focusing on, depending on whether it is an employer on the West Coast versus an employer on the East Coast. So don't be concerned if you have more than one version of your resume. A lot of our students do, and we encourage that because we want to make sure that whatever foot you're putting forward to an employer is the best foot for that particular employer, and that can vary. So those are some just basic tips to keep in mind. On the next 2 pages of your packet, we have some examples, and again, these are just examples. You do not have to be wed to this format. You can sort of change things around in terms of stylistic changes, but generally speaking, this is how the information is laid out. And so the first one is Russell Moore, which is essentially what a resume may look like if you're coming straight from undergrad to law school. Maybe your experience does involve an internship that you had. Maybe it involves working in a department store or with a video store as a manager. So don't worry about that. That's not a problem. We just want to make sure that whatever skills you developed in those positions, that they're accurately reflected on your resume. And that we have talked about things like, you know, I was promoted very quickly. I actually did have to manage a staff. I was responsible for the cash registers and reconciling the cash receipts. So, again, those are things that we will definitely point out to you. On the next page, page is a resume that is probably more akin to sort of a second-year student. So after you've had maybe your first-year summer position, maybe after you've learned whether or not you're on a journal or you're writing for a brief or you've obtained a position on the Moot Court Honor Society. So again, this is sort of to put into perspective what maybe a more advanced resume may look like. So just something, again, it is not something you have to mirror exactly, but it is something there for your guidance. And then the other thing just to mention is cover letters. And a lot of times with cover letters, I think the main thing you want to ask yourself is, after you read your cover letter, would you hire you? If you were in the place of the employer and you're reading the information that's on the cover letter, is it compelling enough that you'd want to take the next step and bring the person in for an interview or otherwise continue with the process? So things to keep in mind, don't just simply regurgitate your resume. The employer hopefully will read both, and it is sort of up for grabs about what they read first. I'm the type of person who likes to read the resume first, and then I'll go to the cover letter to see how you're putting your information and your experience in context. Other employers absolutely say that they read the cover letter first. They want to know why you're interested in their organization, and then they read the resume. Either way, we need to make sure that both of those documents are as perfect as possible, meaning no typos, and making sure that you're referencing the employer in a cover letter more than once, more than just saying, I'm interested in working for your organization and hear all the great things about me, please hire me. We need to make sure there's a connection there. So again, the counselors can certainly work with you on that. The first thing is to get your resume in order, and then the second thing, and what we like to do when we review cover letters, is to make sure it's a targeted cover letter. So please don't send just a generic cover letter that you would want to use in a mail merge process to 200 employers. We want to see a cover letter that is maybe specific to a job posting, or even if there's not a job posting, that you thought about how you could fit into that organization based on how the organization is portrayed either on a website or some other materials. So again, it's something that we will definitely talk with you about. With the resume reviews, I can't emphasize enough, if you can please just take some time and review your resume and get into a shape that's as good as possible. And if that means delaying your, you know, appointment for a couple of days, and so be it, because it will make your appointment so much more efficient with the counselors, who can then go through. We do review resumes before we meet with you. We try to have a comprehensive review, and we want to make sure that it's in the best place possible. And if you come with some questions that you may have for the counselor, that's good as well. For the full-time students, we really do expect that you will be in for your resume reviews no later than February 29th of 2012. And that's because a lot of things were mentioned here that take place in January. There are founders events that take place in February, March, and April. And while you may not need your resume, so to speak, initially at that particular reception, you never know when someone says to you, hey, great, can you send me your resume? And then you want to be responsive and send a resume that's in really good shape, right? So that's why we really want to make sure that you come in for these resume appointments and that you take them as seriously as possible, because we definitely do. It's no secret the market is still very competitive, and we just want to make sure our students are competitive, and that means no typos and resumes that at least are readable and cover letters that really do convey why you're interested at the very baseline. So that's something that we do strive to do in our partnership with you. Any questions about any of the information we covered today? Great. So you all are psyched up to go, and we'll see you hopefully in individual counseling sessions soon. Thank you.